This is Michael Edward Miller for WTC. I'm speaking with an author who wrote a New York Times best-selling book about the relationship between genetics and athletic ability. David Epstein is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated. His book, The Sports Gene, was published in 2013, and it talks about the science behind extraordinary athletic ability. He says there's a genetic component to why some athletes need to train a lot and others need to train only a little. He even says there's a genetic component to willpower. I'm speaking with him because he'll be here February 22nd for a fundraiser at the Tivoli Theater. The fundraiser benefits Normal Park Magnet Museum School, helping them to build a new gym. I want to start out talking about drive and willpower. Some athletes have a really strong drive to, you know, get out there and train every day. You're saying genetics may have something to do with that. How does genetics play into it, into having the fortitude to go out there and train?
Well, yeah, I think there's no question at this point that genetics has a role in that. And actually, one of the most surprising things in reporting the book for me was I had known, because I follow physiology and things like that, that our physiology and the chemical messaging systems in our brain respond to our training and our physical activity. But I didn't realize that researchers who are on the cutting edge of this have proven that the reverse is true as well, that our drive to do certain things, including be physically active, flows from differences in our biology in the first place. And that has to do with all sorts of activities, whether that be eating, doing drugs, or exercising. And it just so happens that some people have their dopamine system, that's the brain's chemical system involved in a sense of pleasure and reward, set up in such a way that they almost are compelled to be very, very frequently or even constantly physically active. And that turns out to be a very helpful attribute for elite athletes.
I mean, me, it makes me kind of feel like, well, I can be lazy and then just blame it on my genes and say, you know what, I don't exercise because I'm not genetically programmed to.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Because one thing I regret a little bit, to be honest with you, is quoting one of those researchers in that chapter saying they're absolutely are such things as couch potato genes. So, you know, it's kind of a joke, but in a way it's true, but at the same time, it doesn't help you much, right?
Like, yeah.
It may indeed be much more difficult for you to get up and go train after a day of work or whatever it is than the next person, but that doesn't mean that being able to blame it on your genes is going to give you better health outcomes, for example, or make you a better athlete. So I think anyone who's been in a training group, you know, and I was in a national level running training group, knows that there are people in the group who have to be managed to train more because they won't train enough on their own. And there are people in the group who have to be managed to train less because they'll overtrain on their own. And so we sort of know there are those differences. And I think the people who don't have that kind of innate drive to move as much need to work a lot harder on creating an environment that will help them do that, because blaming it on your genes is fine, except for it still leaves you with a bad outcome.
Well, if genetics do play a role in this, which you certainly demonstrated that they do, then a lot of people are going to want to know, well, then how do we test for this? How can I, you know, test my child and find out if he's going to be a soccer star or a football star or whatever? What role do you think genetic testing is going to play in the future of sports?
You know, there are a couple countries, Olympic committees that have started talking about doing testing on kids. And for the most part, I think that's really, really premature. So, for example, there are companies that will market genetic tests to parents. And just as one example, one of the most commonly tested for genes in these products is one called ACTN3. So it codes for a protein that's only found in what's called fast twitch muscle fibers, the kind that are like for explosive jumping and sprinting and things like that. And if you don't have it, you know, you're not going to be an Olympic 100 meter runner, like, period, fine. But you can, you know, you already know that, like with a stopwatch, in a much more accurate fashion. And it's just one piece of a really complex puzzle. So you're sort of using this testing to say, well, here's one piece, and then it's often overinterpreted. Like, you would never say what a puzzle depicts from seeing just one piece. And so I think that's the danger with a lot of the genetic testing. So I think no doubt right now, like, the best genetic test for, you know, explosiveness is a stopwatch. And that tests directly both someone's genetics and their environment up to that point. So while I do think there are things we know in terms of, you know, measuring body segments and all sorts of physiological measures, I think we should be very cautious about proceeding to genetic testing at this point because there are just so many unknowns.
And you've talked about genetic testing for football and concussions. Tell me a little bit about that.
Now that's actually, you got me on that one. That's actually a spot where I do think we could put some testing into useful action currently. So, for example, we know there's a gene called APOE and one version of it called APOE4 that puts people at much higher risk of developing Alzheimer's. If they have two versions of it, they're at something like 8 times risk, normal risk of developing Alzheimer's. And it turns out, as we've done more research, that it seems to be involved in actually the brain's ability to recover from any type of injury, whether that be car accident or the kind of hits someone takes when playing football or boxing or mixed martial arts. And so you're starting to see, for example, among the brains of ex-NFL players that are being dissected, more people who had that gene than you would expect. So they aren't recovering as well. And so in this case, you know, even though the most important thing for brain damage is getting hit in the head, not which gene you have, I think here you have something that we know and agree is a risk factor. And we have to ask the question of, you know, if I can figure out if my kid or if myself will be at much higher risk of permanent damage from taking repeated blows to the head, is that something that would be useful for me to know, even if it's not destiny, even if it's only, you know, increases or decreases the odds of damage?
So parents might want to say, you know, my son probably shouldn't play football if he has this gene.
I think that's a legitimate thing to say. You know, replace it with some other injury. You know, if you said, if your son is a pitcher on the high school baseball team and has 4 times the normal risk of tearing his rotator cuff, you know, maybe you'd think about having him play a different position, for example. The kid can still go ahead and play football. So it's not, I don't think anybody should be ruled out ever because of a gene they have. But personally, I wouldn't hide from the information. And I think for me, you know, if I had a kid who had, say, 2 copies of this gene where, you know, really think they're at really increased risk of, you know, the kind of brain damage that might really permanently affect their life, I think I don't know if I could force them to do anything, but I think I might try to steer them towards some other sport.
You'll be here on Monday, February 22nd, to give a talk at the Tivoli Theater. You'll be there with Vols coach Phil Fulmer. What are you planning to talk about?
I want to talk a little bit about what we know about how genetics influence performance and the interplay between genetics and certain kinds of training that add up to make elite athletes. But I also want to share, I want to get into a particular message about what's the best way for youth athletes to develop if we want them to be the best that they can be. And it turns out it's not the message that I think most people have been getting, that they should get an early head start with the most technical practice possible. So I think hopefully I'll overturn a little bit of what some people think about the best way to develop youth athletes.
Well, thank you very much. We're really looking forward to having you here.
It's my pleasure. I'm really looking forward to coming.
That was David Epstein. His book is The Sports Gene. He'll be here on February 22nd, along with UT Vols coach Philip Fulmer, to speak at the Tivoli Theater at 7 p.m. on February 22nd. It's a fundraiser for Normal Park to build a new gym. More information about it is at facebook.com/raisethegym. That's facebook.com/raisethegym. I'm Michael Edward Miller for WUTC.